Occupied Territory with Mike Fader, Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Okay, and this is Mike Fader with Occupied Territory. Lots to talk about this week. What's really sort of popping up in my mind, what everybody seems to be aware of and what everybody can observe, is that the Occupy part of the Occupy movement seems to be in a lot of trouble or on the wane. Obviously, there have been major evictions all over the country, and in most of the big cities, if not all the big cities. I'm not up to date with what's happening in Washington, but there were 30 arrests just the other day. The National Park Service is threatening to evict everybody permanently. So I'm not sure where we stand with this. So one of the great discussions, one of the great debates now raging throughout the whole Occupy movement internally and from people who are commenting on it is it an Occupy movement if they're not actually in people's faces, in public space? That was the whole point of it. It's not called click on a mouse movement. It's not called write a letter to your congressman movement. It's not called let's all get a petition together movement. It's the Occupy movement. And that provides the drama of it. The point being is that America previously to, let's say, the middle of September when Occupy Wall Street started, America has been and continues to be occupied, like an occupying army occupies a place, by Wall Street and by rich corporations and by lobbyists. They occupy the White House. They occupy the Supreme Court. They occupy Congress. They occupy all of our land and our water and our air. They occupy federal agencies. They occupy our pension funds. They occupy everything. They are an invading, occupying army. So this was the response to it, the Occupy movement, to take back what really amounts to, several thousand square yards of territory in the United States. That's nothing. It's absolutely nothing. The people who own and run this country have occupied our government and occupied our land and our economy for decades now, and it's worse than it's ever been. That's the point of it. So what do you do now? And, of course, it's a complicated situation because who knows what would have happened when the winter came. People could barely survive, although it would have been interesting. I know in Denver, where they are trying to reoccupy a park that they were evicted from, they have endured tremendous amount of snow and high winds and cold temperatures, and that's just the beginning. Who knows what kind of winter it'll be? So far, it's still spring in New York, which is early September. The weather is so screwed up and so ruined by basically corporations and by national sovereign governments occupying our air that that the weather is turned completely upside down. But so there are debates going on. What do we do now? I mean, between the police evictions and the state park and the state police and local police evictions of these places, between all the new laws that are passed to cover, you're not allowed to sleep overnight, you're not allowed to lie down, whatever it is to get rid of the Occupy movement. So what happens now? Can it thrive through the winter and then regroup in the spring? To what's happening all over the country now is that people are there's two major things going on. They're showing up, sort of suddenly, still at banks and still at congressman's office and other places like that. They're just sitting there, and it remains to be seen how the police deal with all that, how rough they'll be, how many arrests there'll be. So they're showing up in people's faces, but on a kind of a daily sallying forth basis, like flash mobs and things like that. But they're not encamped anywhere. And I keep thinking, when you think of an encampment, here you had, in the original American colonies, you had the British, where there was a Declaration of Independence, and the British basically had, invaded and occupied this country for many, many, many decades and owned the place, and it was a colonial possession. And the Americans had to fight back to take their land back from these, take it back to create a democracy from these imperial oppressors. So think of Valley Forge. Think of Valley Forge, where people died in that camp in Valley Forge, went through the worst awful winter, one of the worst winters on record. It always seems to be that way when there's some great battle, without getting too poetic or carried away, when there's some great battle between some evil monarchy or some dictatorship, the Battle of the Bulge in Europe, when the democracies relatively speaking, the democracies, America and Britain and France, when they were fighting the Nazis, they were in Belgium and parts of France, mostly in Belgium, and gets to be the winter of 1944 and into the winter of 1945. It was the coldest winter for 100 years. There seems to be something that goes on with these turmoils. It's almost as if the moral and the political and the intellectual struggle that's going on, the struggle for people's lives and the way they live their lives, reaches all the way up and down to the earth and the heavens. So Valley Forge was one of the coldest winters on record, and people froze to death at Valley Forge, and people got gangrene in Valley Forge, and people melted away. I think half his force, Washington's force, melted away. People had to go home, take care of their families, had to protect their families, had to provide for their families. They had to go home finally and get ready for planting season, which would happen in the early spring. And he lost a lot of soldiers to desertion, and the morale was terrible. Yet they stayed there. They occupied that place, and the British did not attack them there. And from there, they launched their attack, the surprise attack. And things like that are symbolic, but they count for everything. So what happens now with the Occupy movement that they are not occupying major camps? There's still a lot of places that exist in Albany and a few other places, but the police are constantly attacking them and passing new laws and evicting them. And sooner or later, I don't know, unless more and more people come together on this, people will run out of space. There are a lot of universities getting involved now, and there are sort of permanent occupations at universities which are becoming more and more complicated. The local police usually don't have any jurisdiction. Well, they have jurisdiction on local campuses, but only unless they're called in or there's an extremely serious crime and they have to come in. But they're usually the campus police, and we've seen what they acted like out at Berkeley and UC Davis, but they're not going to act that way from now on. These are our children in these universities, and America's not going to put up with that. However, people still are going to, is everybody going to stop going to classes? Are people going to drop out of school just to be in the Occupy movement? It's a big debate going on. The big shift lately is that everybody is focusing on, and yesterday, in fact, was a national day of opposing foreclosures. So a lot of the Occupy movement all over the country, and I guess there is some coordination, and I hope there is. Surely there's plenty of coordination when it comes to the cops raiding all these places. They get plenty of advice from Homeland Security and from who knows who else. But so now it's the biggest thing that's happening in a coordinated way with the Occupy movement are people fighting foreclosures. And a lot of this makes a lot of sense, of course, because these are the extreme examples of what banks are doing to Americans. Is basically they own everything, so that if you don't pay your bills from some fake mortgage they gave you, and they're being investigated all over the place. So that's what's happening, basically. Those are major trends going on. One other thing is, which I'm fascinated by, is the other day I received an email from somebody who listens to the show here. Oh, by the way, I want to give you contact information. For today would be a nice day if you felt like calling. I'd love to get some calls today. The call-in number here is 888-874-4888. Okay? 888-874-4888. I wonder if that's when you hit listen live, is the number there prominent next to the listen live thing, or if you look on the site when you're doing it? I don't know. Anyhow, that's the number, 888-874-4888. And if you wanted to tweet, and we can pick those up anytime, somebody could just come in and hand them to me. It's @PRN_radio. And of course, you want to get more information about the show we're doing here, and everything about PRN, go to PRN.FM online, PRN.FM online. We have a tremendous roster of shows here. So people are successfully in some cases, unsuccessfully in others, but so far successfully showing up at places where people's homes are being foreclosed. The other day there was a 103-year-old woman whose house was going to be foreclosed. I think it was down in Atlanta, and in L.A., a woman who's in her 70s, and there's a lot of predatory lending going on. So, and has been going on for years. So it's not always very clear whether the foreclosures on these houses are legitimate, whether all legal steps have been taken, or even the loans made in a legitimate way. For instance, here's a new piece of news that came out the other day. Massachusetts Attorney General Martha Coakley, she's the one who ran against Scott Brown. She's a very sort of uncharismatic person, or as decent as she may be. And she's the one who lost Teddy Kennedy's seat up in Massachusetts. However, she's still the Attorney General. Massachusetts Attorney General Martha Coakley engaged in a lawsuit Thursday with five of the nation's leading banks over deceptive home loan practices and pursuing illegal foreclosure among its customers. You want to check on this, check on Inside Job. There's a great documentary called Inside Job, which explains a lot of this. Coakley claims that J.P. Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, Citigroup, and GMAC used fraudulent information during foreclosure proceedings, initiated foreclosure without holding the actual mortgage, and failed to uphold on loan modification promises. Now, the issue is a result of ongoing occurrence for over a year that these five banks have been using fraudulent documents to seize homes, said Coakley. Coakley is seeking civil penalties, restitution for borrowers, and compensation for registration fees that were avoided, as well as permanent injunctive relief to find a solution to prior unlawful foreclosures. She wants to keep people's houses from being foreclosed until it's investigated whether or not it was a legal loan, whether they were deceived in any way. In many cases, they were. And so here's Chase, right? Chase is one of the major banks that she's investigating. And Chase, for instance, here's a case where some Occupy people got involved, and although there were some other consequences and complex circumstances involved here. But this was in Atlanta last week. After a court approved an eviction notice in northwest Atlanta, the movers and sheriff's deputies sent to the home refused to kick out the woman who lived there, 103-year-old Venia Hall and her 83-year-old daughter, right? Chase Bank. Hall has lived in the house for 53 years. Her grandson, the owner, took out a $17,000 second mortgage but failed to make regular payments. Could be his fault. Maybe he shouldn't have done that, or maybe he was deceived. No one knows till it's investigated, because the banks are generally such thieves and liars. When news got out, politicians, church leaders, and neighbors rallied to the family's side. This really puts a face on a foreclosure, one neighbor told the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Faced with public outcry, Chase Bank announced that it would work out a deal and let Hall stay. So here's Chase, right, who's foreclosing on people like this all over the country, and who knows whether the loans were legal or not, and whether they were fraudulent loans. And even if they weren't, fraudulent loans, that what happened was that the people, and even if people were borrowing beyond their means, it's a hard, cold world. The goddamn winter is here, right? You don't put people out on the street. The banks will survive with this. Yeah, they want to sell the property to people. There are vultures out there in human form, and you can see websites for this. You can even hear ads on radio stations for this. Want to get property cheap? This one's been foreclosed on. Just throw the dead bodies out from the backyard. If they're frozen, you can melt them and throw them out, or they're easier to bury, and just move right in for $5,000. I mean, there are ads on TV how you can make money. There was a convention about 3 months ago down south, or 4 months ago down south, in some fancy hotel, where real estate dealers from all over the country came to learn how to advise people, their clients, to find foreclosed houses where people have been thrown out, so that they could get good deals and resell them and turn them over, right? It's such a sick country. So here's Chase Bank throwing her out, an 103-year-old lady, but didn't get away with that. And in Los Angeles, they're going to throw some 76-year-old woman out. Just as a matter of interest, the chairman of Chase Bank, Jamie Dimon, last year in 2000, rather his last compensation for 2010, the year 2010, $42 million. So here's this son of a bitch, this slimy snake in human form, makes $42 million. $42 million. And they're going to throw a 103-year-old lady out of bed. That's why we need the Occupy movement. Do we have a call?
Yes, you have a Joe from New Jersey.
Okay, Joe, you're on, Joe.
Yeah, I just I'm involved in Occupy Princeton or Occupy My Mind or whatever. But you know, I've thought about an idea, you know, a long time, and what it is it would be called the Emerson Index.
The what? I'm sorry, say it again.
It would be called after Ralph Waldo Emerson.
Okay.
Called it, okay, you know, the Emerson Index. Mm-hmm. And just like they have indexes, the Dow, you know, and all these other indexes, this would be based on ethics and morality. And so basically, you know, you were talking earlier about, you know, if you're going to occupy something, you got to occupy. You can't do it by your computer.
Mm-hmm.
But this might give people a chance. And what it was, what you would do is get everybody involved in the occupy thing, and you would have an index where when a certain corporation falls below a certain number, and you can, we all can decide what that is, you know, they're, you know, whatever illegal things are involved, you don't invest in them anymore. And in fact, you know, not only do you not invest in them anymore, you close all your accounts and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm saying is the only way to get to these people is to hit them where it hurts, and that's the money.
That's true.
So let's just say that we had, you know, Facebook or whatever account. Everybody goes there and says, listen, nobody bought milk today or whatever. I don't know. We'll pick it. No one shopped today. No one buy anything today. And just shut the system down. The thing would happen is they would, it would put a blip, or it would put it on the radar that the market has to watch this. We become this loose cannon that they can't control. I'm telling you, they would straighten up once you hit them. And so if you created an index called the, like I said, I like the name, so I don't really care what you call it.
Mm-hmm.
And you got some really good economic people, you know, Krugman, I don't know, whoever you want to pick.
Right.
And say, listen, you know, let's start picking the corporations that won or sending all their money overseas. Let's pick the ones
that don't pay their taxes. How about those two?
Yeah, don't want to pay their taxes, or the people that, you know, whatever they're up to. God knows what these people are up to. And say, okay, enough's enough. Everybody pull out of them. Just, you know, send a note, say we all pulled out and stuff. I guarantee you, eventually, somebody's going to say, okay, what can we do to straighten this out? Somebody.
Yeah, but you know what? You know what their response to that will be? They'll say, okay, you want to close. For instance, here's Citibank. What they announced today that they're going to lay off 4,000 employees, right?
Right.
And so this is what happens. If you attack these banks, if you go after them where they live, like you say, they just lay off a lot of employees and say, look, this is what you did to people. I mean, the idea that they say that they're not going to loan money because they have trouble with their profits or the business climate is tricky, that's just a lot of crap, you know. I mean, they should be forced to loan the money if the Federal Reserve is giving it to them. But they will tell you, you know, oh, we'll have to close them. We'll have to lay off 4,000 people. You want to be responsible for that?
Yeah, but, you know, the thing is, I can't even keep up with all the news out there. There's some small city that they pulled all their money out of Chase because they would not lend the money. And it was millions of dollars. The city pulled out of Chase because they would not lend money to their citizens. I mean, to the people there. They put all their money in a local bank. What I'm saying is there has to be a system that works around politics and economics. There's a way of mm-hmm. us creating a society where we help each other. So let's say the person that's working Bank of America, they got to lay them off. Well, what happens if there's a neighborhood bank that you just put $20 billion in that neighborhood bank? You can get a job over there.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying is it's got to come.
I understand what you're saying. What you're saying is it's got to stop being all a pyramid. You know, it's got to stop. The power and the direction and the ownership has to stop being from the top down.
And
it has to be spread.
It's going to be painful. We're all going to have to tie ourselves.
That's right.
But the thing about it is, it's all about going back home. We're going to have to go back home to some really decent standards that Emerson and all these other guys stood for. And what we're going to have to do is take care of our own. And each town that occupies, listen.
Yeah, we're going to have to move on because I think we got some other business and some other calls. But you know what? Maybe we can figure out some way to set up an index like that, because that way people can stop looking at the stock market index, which means nothing to the average person, and check over on that other index.
Bill from Georgia on the line.
Okay, Bill from Georgia, you're on.
It's kind of something that Gary would probably support, Gary Knoll.
Mm-hmm.
But how about, not that anyone can afford to buy homes anyway, but how about everyone agrees to just don't buy foreclosed homes?
Well, that would be interesting. I mean, that would force the banks to, that would make the banks maybe let people stay in there or arrange to have to absorb some of the debt. or basically the people would be able to work something out where they could buy it back over a long period of time. I mean, the banks have to take some of the pain that everybody else is taking. They get everything, and they don't pay anything. They don't give anything, you know. That's a good suggestion, I think.
And plus, that's something everyone can do. It doesn't have to be organized. It's just, you know, you just decide, don't buy a foreclosed home.
Well, it's a good suggestion, but you know, this is America, right? You live in America, I live in America, we grew up in America. It's a filthy, greedy, nasty, selfish country, and there's no getting around it. And I'm not just blaming the top 1% or Wall Street. This country, and talk about the trickle-down theory. I don't know if it's a trickle-down theory. The whole country is soaked in selfishness and greed. We are brought up. Money is everything here. Get ahead of people. Compete. Don't, you know, get what you can. The other guy will get it first if you don't get it. Really, we could all, I agree with you, and you're agreeing with me. This is a good idea. But how do you organize people? And this brings up another question, too, is the Occupy movement so far, for very good reasons, has decided it doesn't want to be, have a leadership structure. Sooner or later, somebody is going to have to, or a group of somebodies is going to have to establish themselves as leaders of these groups, or probably it will never quite get where it needs to go. There's got to be, for instance, if you take a tremendous amount of energy and you want to do something with it, unless you focus it into a flame or a laser beam, nothing much is going to come from that, you know.
Yeah,
I don't mean to be discouraging. I'm just saying, you know.
No, I totally agree. And I just don't see that there's ever going to be a solution. I think it really comes down to people individually have to do the right thing, you know. And it's like, it's not in human nature. It's probably not in nature at all. It's probably just the way things are, you know.
Well, but there's got to be something like altruism. I mean, sometimes here and there, like, for instance, the world did finally gang up on South Africa, and that worked. And then in America, they were... When you look at Cesar Chavez back in the 60s, when these people were being paid like, you know, 50 cents a day, practically, you know, I mean, the whole country, or more or less not the whole country, but a good portion of the country just stopped buying grapes. It was astounding. I remember that time. Nobody would buy grapes. Nobody would eat grapes. Nobody would buy wine from California. And it actually made the growers changed their ways. It changed everything. I believe we could do this. The idea of not buying foreclosed houses is a terrific idea, you know? And if you think to yourself, let's say you're somebody who's a teacher or something, or a cop, and you know, and all of it, and you've been wanting to buy a house for a long time, but you can't afford it because the prices were absurd to begin with. All of a sudden, there's a beautiful house in your own town, and it's going for $32,000 instead of $320,000 because the banks can't sell it to anybody else, and you know, there's no market for it. And you say, this is the chance of a lifetime. But how do you feel living in a house that the bank threw somebody out of? You know, maybe there's a way to do this. Maybe there is a way to do it. It's a good idea. You know, I like this idea.
Right on.
All right.
All right. Take care, man.
Yeah, thanks for calling. You got somebody else? Okay. Let me mention a couple of things here. Just some things. This is why we need an Occupy movement. Some people are saying, do we really need it? As far as the major media is concerned, all of whom should be ashamed of themselves, and how they sleep is a mystery to me. They've already declared it dead. Now that the Occupy movements have been evicted, there is no more Occupy movement. They wanted it dead to begin with. Why? You could figure that out yourself. Who owns the major media, like the New York Times, CNN, even major cable stations? Who owns these places? Gigantic corporations. Banks invest in them. You can't, you know, they're not going to report on this. They're going to dismiss it. They're going to ridicule these people. I mean, forget about Murdoch and his crew. I mean, they're just out of control, fringe lunatics. But even major places like CNN, ABC, NBC, they pay no attention to them, or they deride them, or they just treat them with contempt because it threatens the system, and the system is what owns them. I mean, Wolf Blitzer gets paid $4 million, $5 million a year. You think he's going to put in an article or insist on an article on the Occupy movement? No, it's not going to happen. This is the way it goes. This is the way it goes. And this is America. Here's a couple of things, reasons why we need an Occupy movement, why it has to stay in the news, why everybody has to do as much as possible to help them out. The winter is a time of retreat. The winter is a time of retreat. It's a retreat in people's souls, in people's hearts, in nature. It's natural. Animals do this. Trees do it. Everything does. People do it. People go inside. They retreat during the winter. It's a cycle of nature. You know, it's one of the oldest cycles there is. And they emerge again in the spring. But that doesn't mean these things have to stop happening all the time. people can be out on the streets, people can do things, sudden raids, temporary occupations, until spring comes again and it can happen. What we need to do is protect this and keep it going. Just a couple of items of interest why we need an Occupy movement. The President of the United States, President Jellyfish, President Wall Street Goon, he shows up in New York City. President Obama showed up in New York City last Wednesday. A week ago, he shows up last Wednesday. And he makes a trip up here. He flies Air Force One up here. He's going to have a dinner in New York City. He flies Air Force One up here, polluting God knows how many millions of cubic feet of air and land. Flies Air Force One up that we pay for, right? How much should that cost? I don't know. $100,000 for a short hop to New York with him and his and the fuel and the security and his retinue and everything else and what he gets paid. And so he flies up to New York for the afternoon and the evening. The security detail in New York, the extra cop detail, probably cost $100,000-$150,000, and everybody in New York was screaming about, the cops, it's costing us so much money for the Occupy movement. They didn't even need to be there in the first place. But they decided they had to be there to watch these terrorists right down in Zuccotti Park. President flies up, polluting the atmosphere, spending on God knows how much money, our tax money, comes and he lands here, costs New Yorkers I don't know how much in tax money for police security, also extra cops on the street watching to make sure nothing happens to the employee of Wall Street in chief. And, of course, cops are pulled away sometimes from other neighborhoods, so people probably committed more crimes. Traffic is completely jammed in about half of Manhattan. Cab drivers can't make money that day. A total screw-up, ruining the average person's life in about five or six different major ways, right? And he comes up here. What did he come up here for? $1,000 a plate fundraising dinner for his reelection campaign. So he comes up here, costs all of us hundreds of thousands of dollars to raise hundreds of thousands of dollars for himself from people with a lot of money. That is America, right? Let me give you another example.
I thought it was $30,000 a plate, Mike, not $1,000.
No, that it changes all that. I mean, there are people who speak at dinners that are $30,000 a plate or lunches. He came here about a month ago and spoke.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was about a month ago. That was $30,000 a plate. That was about 50 people in a room. This was hundreds of people in the Sheraton Ballroom for $1,000 a plate.
Okay.
But, it's all the same, right? It's all the same. I think it was about 6 weeks ago he shows up and he speaks to 50 picked representatives of Wall Street firms, and that was $30,000 a shot. Same thing, security flying up here. So how about this? Last week, Ohio State University hired a new football coach, a guy named Urban Meyer. And they hired him last Monday, giving him one of the richest contracts ever in college sports, the latest indication that the big business of college football is undeterred by the nation's broader economic woes or concern about the prominence of sports on campus. He will make $4 million a year in salary and bonuses. The deal is worth more than three times the $1.3 million that the university president, E. Gordon G., made in 2010. First of all, the university president is getting paid about $1 million too much. Meanwhile, they hire a football coach, a guy to teach a bunch of steroidal, half-criminal retards to play a game for $4 million. How many teachers is that? How many salaries for sanitation workers, for firemen, for cops, for people who do something real in the world, except teach big zombies how to hit other people and throw a ball? $4 million. And then on the same page where this is reported, was the front page of the New York Times, this article: millions of school children in the U.S. are receiving free or low-cost meals for the first time as their parents, many once solidly middle class, have lost jobs or homes during the economic crisis, qualifying their families for a decades-old safety net program for people who are in poverty or approaching poverty. The number of students receiving subsidized lunches rose to 21 million last year from 18 million in 2006 and 7, a 17% increase, according to an analysis by the New York Times, from data from the Department of Agriculture. 11 states, including Florida, Nevada, New Jersey, and Tennessee, had four-year increases of 25% or more. They give this guy $4 million to coach a football team, which is a meaningless endeavor, in some cases worse than meaningless, so it provides some entertainment for some people, and then maybe they'll go on and make some ridiculous salaries themselves, these guys who manage to survive concussions. Meanwhile, they close down science labs, they curtail experimental research at the medical school, they close down the history the history departments in these places. The university president, who's vastly overpaid anyhow, is a man of probably, he's probably got three PhDs and runs this gigantic Ohio State University, the medical school, has every other kind of, probably has a law school, everything. But the football coach gets paid more than anybody else there. That's America. Meanwhile, half the people in the country are going hungry. They're going on school lunches. Let me put it this way. One other thing, which also, you know, this recently has come to light because 60 Minutes did a report on this. If you're a member of Congress, if you're Nancy Pelosi or John Boehner, by the way, and I picked those names because they were involved in this scandal and nothing is going to happen to them. If you're a member of Congress, if you're a member of the Senate or the House, you can buy and sell stocks on the stock market with insider information gotten from your job as a congressperson or as a senator. People come to testify in closed hearings. You get reports. You're the head of the Finance Committee. A man named Backus from Arkansas, I forget his first name, who is the chairman now in the House of the Finance Committee in the Senate, in the House of Representatives. He's the chairman of the Finance Committee. He's the chairman of the committee that oversees financial dealings, what might be financial crimes like insider trading. In 2008, he made insider trading deals based on information given confidentially to him when he was on that committee. Nancy Pelosi has made hundreds of thousands of dollars in profit since she's been in Congress. John Boehner has made hundreds of thousands of dollars of profit. There are a couple of dozen senators and congressmen who have made millions of dollars of profit trading stocks based on insider information they got because of their jobs. If you did that, if I did that, if Martha Stewart did that, when if you're the head of some hedge fund and you do that, you get put in jail. It's against the law to do that. Talk about no level playing field. Wouldn't you like to have a tip on everything that's going to happen? Henry Paulson, here's a good one. Henry Paulson, by the way, this law is still, there is no law against doing this. The Congress is allowed to trade on insider trading. Over a period of something like 7 years, they average 12% higher on their returns from stock market trades than the average American. Why? Because they had inside information. It's illegal for the whole country, but not for them. They have a 9% approval rating. I'd like to meet one of the 9% of the American people who has an IQ over 53 who approves of Congress. I would love to meet somebody like that. I would also like to meet a three-headed giraffe, you know, but I don't think I'm going to. Here's another one. Henry Paulson, who was the Secretary of the Treasury, right, and who made everybody in the country feel like they were going to go crazy unless immediately, and this included members of Congress, gave $1 trillion to banks and to his old alma mater, Goldman Sachs, where he was the chairman before he became Treasury Secretary. I don't think he ever really changed jobs anyhow. Henry Paulson allegedly gave hedge fund bosses inside information on plans to seize Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Former Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson gave top hedge fund bosses an inside scoop about the government's plans for Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae at the height of the financial meltdown. The report from Bloomberg News, of all places, details a meeting at the Manhattan headquarters of a hedge fund in July 2008 when Mr. Paulson told the millionaire money managers that the government could seize Fannie and Freddie and wipe out their stock. There is no evidence that any of the executives attempted to profit from the inside information by selling the stock short or betting against it. Right, there's no evidence. I was just out in the rain, but there's no evidence that it's raining because right now I'm not wet. There's no evidence that you give. There's no evidence that a shark swims over to a bunch of other sharks and here's some bleeding meat. There's no evidence they bit it. Oh, okay. But Bloomberg claims, this is Bloomberg News, claims that Paulson gave the hedge fund chiefs a very different story to the one he gave earlier that day to some reporters. Here's what Henry Paulson did. He's the Secretary of the Treasury, appointed by the President, right? Secretary of the Treasury. He knows, because he's the Secretary of the Treasury, that the government is going to seize Fannie and Freddie and make announcements. It's going to cause their stock to plummet, right? So he goes and tells his old friends from Goldman Sachs and other hedge funds in some fancy club in New York City, where maybe only people like the president go to raise money, and he tells them what's going to happen. So that they all sell this stuff, right? And you know, there's no evidence. Of course, there's no evidence, right? Because nobody's looking for it because they're afraid to deal with them because they're all the same people. They sell all this. They save their investors and themselves, and their investors are just a bunch of rich people in most cases too. They save them hundreds of millions of dollars in losses. Meanwhile, the public takes the hit. You, me, the teacher's pension fund, whatever. We all take the hit because it goes plunging down. We didn't know about it, but he and his rich friends knew about it. And what's even worse is that the day before he told the hedge fund people this, there was an interview with some reporters from major newspapers and media outlets. What's going to happen with Fannie and Freddie? And he said, well, the outlook looks okay. He lied. He lied, and he gave insider information. Henry Paulson belongs in jail for 10 years, in federal jail, making license plates or chopping rocks or whatever they do these days, or doing the laundry along with everybody else, right? He needs to be in jail. Pelosi needs to be in jail. Boehner needs to be in jail. Any congressperson or senator that ever made money based on insider information needs to be indicted by a federal grand jury, arrested, locked up. You know, and then brought to trial and hopefully convicted and thrown in jail. This is why there's an Occupy movement, because the country is in the total clutches of rich people like this. I mean, today is Pearl Harbor Day. Today is Pearl Harbor Day, right? And, you know, the day that the Japanese had a sneak attack, you know, and there's all kinds of controversy about that, but the day that, you know, the war basically was declared by Japan on the United States. And they fly in unbeknownst to the sailors and soldiers. And really, they didn't know. I mean, somebody may have known, but... and I forget how many people were killed. Over 2,000 people were killed and wounded, you know, or murdered that day by the Japanese. So it's Pearl Harbor Day. And that leads, you know, to World War II. And then we're fighting overseas. We're fighting the Nazis. We're fighting the Japanese. And just the other day, was about a week ago, the United States Senate passed a bill, and you may be following this, which was approved 93-7, 93 votes in favor, 7 against. They passed a bill which was amended, which was a defense appropriation bill to keep all the bases we don't need running, to keep the wars going that we don't need, where the whole world hates us and where we murder innocent civilians almost every other day in some other country, or ruin somebody's economy or destroy their culture. So they passed a gigantic funding bill, and on top of that, they slipped in a couple of amendments to the bill, Democrats and Republicans, and which was passed 93-7, that will allow, if it's signed into law by the president, that will allow the United States military to operate inside the United States. So that all the video games we see of people, you know, with body armor on and carrying heavy weapons and smoke curling up in the background and twisted Eiffel Towers and skyscrapers half blown up will become a reality, right? I mean, this bill will allow, if signed into law by the president, and who knows what this jellyfish son of a bitch will do when it hits his desk, right? He's running for office because that's all he cares about. It allows the United States military to operate within the continental United States. It allows them to arrest anyone suspected of being a terrorist based on no evidence except their own intelligence, quote unquote. If they decide that you're giving aid to a terrorist or that you're being supportive of a terrorist, if they decide you're being supportive of them or you're giving aid to them, they can arrest you too. And then after they arrest these people, they'll lock them up just like in their secret bases or Guantanamo indefinitely without trial. There's no habeas corpus, there's no rules of evidence, and you've got no defense. You'd be locked up and locked away forever, and they could torture you too if they want. This is not a fairy tale. This is not a knee-jerk liberal conspiracy theory. They just passed the bill in the Senate. And only 7 senators, I think 4 Democrats and 3 Republicans, voted against it. What world is this? What world are we living in? What country are we living in? The people who fought in World War II, the men who fought in World War II, on Iwo Jima, on who sacrificed their lives and their limbs in the hundreds and hundreds of thousands on Iwo Jima and Omaha Beach, you know, in Normandy. Did they fight? Did they fight so at Lexington and Concord as well in the American Revolution and in Iwo Jima and Omaha Beach so that the government would wage war on all of us as if we were terrorists in our own land? Did they die so that people on Wall Street could swindle us out of our life savings with the help of the Treasury Secretary and the rest of the government? The corporations could ship jobs overseas, take away our houses, destroy the air, the earth, the water, to spy on us, to lock us up? What does Pearl Harbor Day mean? A couple of weeks ago was Veterans Day. And you get all these people getting on the air with these pious, pompous speeches. All brave boys and girls, all brave men and women overseas fighting for our freedoms. You know what? To use a certain phrase, 99% of the people in America, of Americans, have no goddamn idea whatsoever what anybody is fighting for overseas, and they don't even know what our freedoms mean anymore. People are stuck in front of their TVs and their video games. They're going on vacations. They're going to Disneyland. They're going to Las Vegas. They are, eating junk food, and they are just sort of trying to get by, and they have no idea. You know, you stand up at the ball game, and you put your hand over your heart, when Kate Smith sings God Bless America, and you get these tears come to your eyes, although you've never fought for your country in the first place. You have no idea even what the Constitution says or the Declaration of Independence. But you got your hand over your heart. You take your hat off. The flag is waving. It's not even a flag. It's an electronic flag. It's waving in the outfield, you know, underneath the smaller regular flag, made in China, by the way. And nobody even knows what they're doing anymore. We are living in a patriotic, delusional state in America. George Carlin said, they call it the American dream because you've got to be asleep to believe it. Good old George Carlin, and I miss him. They call it the American dream because you've got to be asleep to believe it. So that's why we need an Occupy movement. That's why this show is here, and that's why I keep dedicating time to it. I have a Facebook page for this show. What is the Facebook page? You want to get to the Facebook page, go to prn.fm, prn.fm, and you can, when you get there, you can check out Occupied Territory. Go to the show schedule, check out Occupied Territory. And on the archives there or on the page, it'll lead you to where the Facebook page is. I would like everybody listening to participate in this Facebook page. I want to keep this thing going, even if it's down to sort of a root fire, you know, for the winter. If it's down to just glowing embers, as long as we can blow air into it again, you know, from time to time, and then have it burst into fire again, a raging fire of revolution I'd like to see next spring. Next week on Occupied Territory here on Wednesday, what we're going to have is, the plan is we have a guest on who is the author of something called the 99% Declaration, or one of the authors of something called the 99% Declaration. There is a written renewal of the Declaration of Independence and of the Constitution, only recast from the people's point of view. From our point of view, from the 99% point of view. It's a beautifully, interestingly written document. You might agree with some of it, disagree with some of it. It's online. You want to find out, you want to read this whole document. You can get the summaries, summary points, or you can read the whole document. I suggest you go read the whole document. I'm going to have the author of this on next week. And he's also somebody who collaborated with another person, putting a wonderful commercial on TV for the 99% Declaration of Independence. And for the Occupy movement. So far, because they don't have a lot of money, it only aired twice on Keith Olbermann's show. And for TV, that's where you go if you want to find out what's going on with the Occupy movement and you want to hear something which is the most cutting edge. Keith Olbermann left MSNBC, well, because he's got a bad temper and because he's arrogant. There's no two ways about that. People have reported that he's almost impossible to work with. You can't give him any orders or any directions. But good for him. You know, that's the way he is. So he went over to this place called Current. It's called Current TV. It's not on every channel in every locality, but try to get Current TV and watch Keith Olbermann at 8 p.m. Always worth watching. And as I remind people, go to Alternet. Alternet.org is the place to go. Alternet.org online if you want to get regular updates about the Occupy movement. So, Pearl Harbor Day. Veterans Day. People fought and died in World War II. The whole country turned upside down. right? We sacrifice on the home front, and people made the ultimate sacrifice. They sacrificed, they lost their lives fighting for freedoms, you know, in jungles with snakes crawling over them, you know, with malaria, you know, freezing to death at the Battle of the Bulge, you know, being blown apart by German artillery. And one of the reasons they were doing it for, they got drafted, yes, they got drafted. They were fighting for their buddies, which is what every combat soldier always says. But they were also fighting as Americans because they were brought up to believe in something, and they intended, after they got through fighting and winning, to come home to a place that had actual freedoms, where there was a chance that you could get somewhere. Yeah, you were never going to get rich as a rich person's son was going to get. I mean, inherited money is inherited money. And if you were in the right clubs, or you went to Yale, you know, like the Bushes, if you knew everybody and you went to the right schools, and if you, you know, you had the right connections, if you had money to begin with, well, people, the average American is never going to get that high as long as we have a capitalist society, right? There's a lot of inside trading and inside connections and old boys clubs. But at least you had a chance when you came back. There were manufacturing jobs. The economy was expanding. We were actually making things in this country besides money. Now, basically, the only thing in this country that anybody ever makes is money, when they're making any money. And that's usually rich people making money off of money. I don't know why they even bother doing that. They should just skip to counterfeiting, because that's as close as you can get, right? Meanwhile, they were fighting for, they understood that when you went to school in the 30s and the 40s and the 20s, they actually taught history. They taught civics. You understood the Declaration of Independence. You understood the Constitution. You understood the American Revolutionary War and what people went through and why they went through it. You know? But now, when people stand up and say, let's have a moment's silence for our brave men and women fighting for our freedoms overseas, there is nobody fighting for our freedoms overseas. There are people overseas who are wearing our uniforms and running our drones and manning our artillery and our missile ships and our cruisers and carrying heavy weapons and automatic weapons in countries all over the earth. They're not fighting for anybody's freedom. They're fighting to protect money. They're fighting to protect corporations. They're fighting to protect dictators. There's nobody fighting for our freedoms overseas. We are well protected over here. The Department of Homeland Security is a big, nasty corporate joke on the rest of us. So, you know, it makes me sick to my stomach when I hear all this crap about it. And you hear this at sports events all the time, because they're the most conservative and stupid of all people. They really are. You know, our guys are over there fighting for our freedoms. Yeah, really? What about the freedoms of other people? What about the freedoms of other people? What are we really fighting for? Absolutely astounding. If anybody else wants to call, otherwise we'll move on to one or two other things, or else we'll just... there's one other thing I wanted to tell you, but I don't know if we'll have time for it. So again, the call number here today, if you want to call, is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And next week, at about 1 o'clock, or whenever we start, we're going to have Michael Pollack, who is a lawyer, and he's one of the authors of this really brilliant, interesting new 99% declaration, a sort of a new declaration of independence for the people in the United States now who are being victimized by their own government. And this is another thing they want to do, and I hope it comes off, is they want to have a new Continental Congress to pass this declaration just the way it was passed in 1776. They're going to Philadelphia. They're trying to make arrangements with the city of Philadelphia, and I hope it works out, to actually meet there and hold a new 99% Continental Congress based on principles of equality and fairness that didn't exist at the first one, and based on the financial and the realities of our power realities of our government and our society right now. And you should see it. It's really fascinating to read. Sometimes it's too politically correct. It's too extreme. But in, I'd say, about 90% of it, I'm in wholehearted agreement with. It's the 99% declaration online, and hopefully the author will be here next week. The number here is 888-874-4888, and I really want you all to get involved with the Facebook page. So why? Because for my greater glory? No, I don't think so. I'm not going to get a raise from zero to zero here, and I might, but I don't know what it adds up to. Double zero? So, you know, go to the Facebook page, and the way you can get there is by going to prn.fm, prn.fm, and just check out Occupied Territory, the page for Occupied Territory or the archives, and you can listen to some of the older shows, but it'll direct you to the Facebook page. Post videos that you have, any news of demonstrations, opinions that you have, any essays you think are apropos, things you want people to understand about it. We got to keep this thing going. Absolutely have to keep this thing going. So I'm just looking at this stuff that I cut out from the paper. Can you imagine? I mean, what fools, what saps, what suckers we all are, how they get away with this? The state of things is that if you're a congressperson or you're a senator who is elected by the people of the United States, you and me go out and we vote, you know, because we're programmed to go vote because it's supposed to make a difference. And we elect these people. We send them to Washington. And they sit there, and as part of their jobs, they hear testimony or get private, confidential reports on what's going to happen with certain industries. Like if you're on the Committee for Science and Technology, you might get a report, a confidential report, before anybody else sees it, right? And you could be a Democrat or a Republican, whoever, man or woman. You get a report, and it says there has definitively, it's been passed by government inspectors, and everybody's looked into it, the FDA, whatever it is. There's a brand new drug that's coming out, and by such and such a company. It may even be a small company never heard of before, and it has absolutely been proven to kill colon cancer. It will zero in and kill colon cancer, and there are almost no side effects. Imagine a company like that with a product like that. You would get rich, wouldn't you, if you invested in their stock? Let's say it's selling at 3, or if it's some big company, it's selling at 41. Okay, so you go call up your broker and say, buy me 5,000 or 10,000 shares, because half the members of Congress are millionaires. Half the members of our representative Congress are millionaires. I know we started out that way. There's not so much new about it.
Gene from New Hampshire is on.
Okay, Gene, good. Interrupt me. I've been talking too much.
No, I didn't want to interrupt.
Please do.
But what I wanted to ask was, I also saw that 60 Minutes program,
And
I was really glad you brought it up. But tell me if I'm wrong. From what I understood also is, not only do they get inside information from legally and enrich themselves.
It's legal now. It shouldn't be legal, but
right.
It is legal now, yeah.
Right. But they also, on the other hand, can pass laws that also will benefit their pocketbooks. Was I correct in my understanding?
Well, yeah, they can craft a law or stick amendment onto another law, which will, but this goes on all the time, which will enable them for instance, this is one thing they do all the time with their, with their piggyback amendments. They'll say that such and such an industry should be placed in this location, or maybe we should give a license to this company to produce something or other. Just so happens that company is right in their own backyard, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then they buy shares in it.
Right.
They can pass laws, put little amendments in it, or little exclusions, or little additions, which benefit them personally. There's a reason why half the people in Congress are millionaires. Newt Gingrich was making $10,000 a year as a history teacher in Georgia someplace, West Georgia Tech or something. Goes into Congress in 1978. Now he's worth $12 million. He made all of his money by being in Congress, making speeches because he was in Congress, being the Speaker of the House and getting paid a ridiculous amount of money, and selling his influence afterwards. They're all a bunch of liars and hypocrites. They're in bed with rich people, and that's why there has to be an Occupy movement.
I agree.
Anyhow,
thank you. Thanks
for calling. And try the Facebook page. Okay, where are we? How much time do we have left? We have 1 minute left? That would be 60 seconds? Okay. Did you want to count them down for me right now? No, it's okay. So before I leave, don't forget, next week, tune in. I'm really excited to talk about this. This whole 99% declaration, a new declaration of independence for a new country the way it really is. And let's end, as we usually do, with some quotes. Here's a quote. Fascism should be more appropriately called corporatism because it is a merger of state and corporate power. That's from Benito Mussolini. And here's the last quote. We can have democracy in this country, or we can have great wealth concentrated in the hands of a few, but we can't have both. That's Louis Brandeis, Supreme Court judge.